Trust Business Lunch. You're listening to WGN Radio. I'm John Williams. Pete Zimmerman's the producer. Elise Glink, a frequent guest on this show, will fill in for me tomorrow. I'm taking Thursday and Friday off. It's been a long, old trouble. And you'll be in good hands with Elise and Pete Zimmerman, too. And as always, we are in Terry Savage's good graces when she joins us on Wednesdays here on WGN Radio. Hi, Terry. Let's jump into some of these market numbers today. After the election, up 693 on the Dow, 102 S&P, 447 on the NASDAQ. How about that? I'll let you pop her up there, Pete.
Let me try and do three things.
Okay.
In this short segment. One is I'm going to give you the official explanation of those numbers. Then I'm going to give you two interesting things that everybody out there will probably want to discuss with their friends over dinner. Unusual things about the market, okay? So first of all, why the rally? The rally is because, number one, there's no big Democratic blue wave taking over the Senate. That's pretty obvious, and that means there's not going to be some huge tax bill that will boost capital gains taxes, et cetera, et cetera. So a sigh of relief. But also, it shows that maybe political season is pretty much over now, and there will be a stimulus bill. In fact, Mitch McConnell said he'd like to get one out by the end of the year. So that puts money into the economy, which is a good thing, and there's not a, you know, great immediate concern about taxes. So that is the immediate reaction of the stock market. But let me give you an interesting point here. You know, on TV, I've been watching every single cable channel and news channel, and, oh, we can't predict this. This is close, but this county and that, this and that, mail-in and so forth. There is a futures market. It's not like the Chicago Mercantile Exchange. It's a kind of an online market of professional traders that trades real money. I mean, where they put their real money where their mouth is. And I'm going to try and have you picture this. At the number 100 is the likelihood of a Trump win. By the way, this market closes on the 14th, so it's been trading for a while, and it will stay open now. The way you trade this market is at the number 100, it's like sure thing Trump won. At the number zero, it's sure thing Biden won. Now, for the last couple of days, Trump, and last night in the middle of the night, Trump was trading at the number 80. I mean, a significant likelihood in this, which is a real money market. This is not what odds are made by bookies or Las Vegas. There's real traders putting real money on this. Trump was at 80. His numbers started plummeting, I'm looking, earlier this morning. I mean, like about 6 or 7 o'clock, at 8 o'clock. And now the Trump number, it was down as low as about 13. It is now trading at about 17 or 18. So down from 80 to 18 with zero, meaning Biden win. This is where traders are willing to put their money. And I watched the market take off. And I thought, what could that be? It coincided with the likelihood that although you might have a Republican Senate, this market, for whatever it's worth, we'll see, is saying you're far more likely to have a Biden presidency. Now, I don't know what they're looking at because, you know, everybody, NBC, CBS, CNN, they've all got their maps and their counties and their analysts and so forth. But this money market, where money puts its mouth, is saying big odds of a Biden win, and this could, you know, this could stretch out over a number of days.
Yeah.
So fascinating that's what caused the rally. I mean, that was congruent with the rally in the stock market, the sense that the big money is saying it's a Biden win as president, but not taking over the Congress.
Sam Panayanovich, who follows sports and wagering and sports wagering for us, texted me last night, and he was charting some of the offshore wagering on the presidential election. And it started out high for Biden, then plummeted, then went back up for Trump, then plummeted again. And even this morning, he's charting it kind of the way you are. The whole world is watching this. It's fascinating to me that people would even now be throwing money into that market, but evidently
they are traders. They trade anything that moves, and they're putting their money there. This is a global marketplace, by the way. It's called FTX. And you can look at it at FTXT, Trust.com. But the most interesting thing about it is that there was a big plunge that coincided with the rally in the market. There was a big plunge in Trump odds. Now, I want to tell you one more thing before I know you're going to go to a break in a minute. Let me just make one more point. Everybody, I mean, it's sort of like the common sense wisdom. I stopped 10 people on the street and said, will the stock market do better under Democrats or Republicans? And probably most people would say, oh, my God, under Republicans. I mean, they're friendly to business. They cut taxes. That's all got to be really bullish. I want to give you one other fact from the Stock Traders Almanac. This is another one you're going to discuss at dinner. They looked at years under Democrats and years under Republicans going back over 100, almost 120 years. There were 56 years of Democrat presidencies and 64 of Republicans. If you had invested $10,000 at the beginning of the Democratic regimes, that would have grown to $532,739. So let's call it $10,000 to $533,000. If you had done the same $10,000 investment under the Republican regimes, it would have grown to only a little over $108,000. So under Democrats, the market, 533, did about five times better than under the 64 years of Republicans. That comes from the Stock Traders Almanac. So if, in fact, you have a Democratic president and a Republican House, well, sure, there'll be a Senate, there'll be more gridlock, there'll be probably not a big tax increase. There could be an infrastructure bill if they get together. And I like to look at the optimistic side of things. We might have set ourselves up for a good stock market ahead and perhaps for economic growth ahead and getting past this COVID thing ahead and also some sensible COVID, you know, health policies. So wouldn't that be nice if everything just worked out for the best?
Market seems to be saying yes to that. It's 12:17. Terry Savage, terrysavage.com, 312-981-7200. Let's catch you up on a couple of other things here. This is your turn to call. Terry is sometimes with us for the full hour. She's only with us till 12:30. It's 12:17. You've got a question or comment, 312-981-7200. We're here to help you with Terry, 312-981-7200. Terry Savage, visit terrysavage.com. Here to answer questions from you about your home, your mortgage, your unemployment stimulus, and things like that. Which I was glad to hear, Terry, you mentioned a moment ago, Mitch McConnell says, let's get something done by the end of the year.
Yeah.
It would have been nice if we'd done that 2-3 months ago, but whenever. I'm just very surprised to see. I remember after the election 2016.
Shocked.
Yes, ma'am?
Are you shocked that politics is being pushed aside now that the election's over and they're going to get together and do something?
Yes,
shocking.
Yes. Well, I was born yesterday, so. But I remember after the election in 2016 when the futures immediately on being clear that Trump was going to win dropped 600, but then the next day everything bounced back up. And
No, it bounced back up, but had a stupendous rally. I remember that. Another one of the things. I looked at this advanced market on that's sort of a futures market on the presidential outcome where traders around the world are putting money.
Yeah.
I remember at that time I was out at dinner that night, and all of a sudden we're sitting there at dinner, and I'm sneaking a peek as usual at the markets, the futures markets, and all of a sudden they started plummeting. And I went, oh, my goodness, I don't know what's going on. I have to leave here. I threw down some money and said, I'm leaving you all. I got to get home in front of my computer. It was a crazy time, but that was. They declined sharply and rallied the next day. I don't ever, you know, it's fun to talk about it, and you always want me to talk about the numbers on a day when they're big like this, but the fact is this is going to have to work itself out. The election, the results won't be final, I'm sure, for quite a while, and whether there's even a lawsuit or not, it's just taking a lot of time to count these. And the stock market's going to have to digest not just the presidential election, but again, Congress. And by the way, don't overlook the House of Representatives. Last I saw, actually, the Republicans made some inroads. I'm not sure numbers, but I saw that in the House, too. So a divided government can be the best or worst of things because nothing horrible will get done, but maybe something great will get done now just before the new Congress is seated in terms of a stimulus.
Yeah, in theory, I like the idea of not one party controlling all three branches, but or two branches, the House, the Senate, and the executive branch, but I guess it just depends on how much gridlock you get, but maybe that keeps anybody from running too much roughshod over the other side. So I like the check, if you will. Just a couple of areas to note. Gun stocks plunged as election uncertainty continues. I'm just reading online. Vote counting is still underway in battleground states. Investors and firearm sellers appear to be preparing for greater gun control in the coming years. Smith & Wesson brands fall. Well, why would they be falling? I would imagine that those stocks...
Well, people may be running out and buying guns now. This is kind of an insane reaction, but they might be doing that. However,
fear is that they'll be less able to do so.
Yeah. In the future, if there's more control over gun sales under what was going to be a Democratic, either Congress or administration, there might be some restrictions on gun ownership. And that, I mean, the market's looking out beyond the immediate.
Yeah, I see your point. And one other note about that, just thinking along those lines, shares of DraftKings jumped 4.1% after early election results showed strong support for expanded sports gambling in several states, including Maryland. That is such an issue here in Illinois, sports wagering. And evidently those companies are the beneficiaries now, too. More money going into those individual stocks. DraftKings up 4%.
Online gambling and even the stocks of things like E-Trade or TD Ameritrade being bought out by Schwab, there's this, you know, there's a, someone said, I heard this and it made perfect sense to me. Look, if you're going to tax work and you're not going to reward patient long-term capital gains investing and you're going to keep interest rates low that little old ladies can't earn any money in the bank, you're sort of driving people to speculation, whether it's on Robinhood or DraftKings or anywhere else. And it makes an interesting point. Savers have been penalized, number one, by low interest rates. Number two, there were some tax provisions on the Democratic side that would have made dividends very much less attractive. So you, people used to buy, you know, utility stocks and so forth for dividends, but the taxation of them would have not been so attractive. And capital gains, you know, there was no reward for that, a lower tax rate, because you held stocks for a long time. So it's kind of like, okay, you want to make some extra money? You know what happened in California?
No.
They were trying to put Uber and Lyft under the thumb of the state and say that they had to be classified as full-time employees and subject to all kinds of rules. And that was voted down substantially, I hear, at this point. People who don't want to work 8 hours a day in a fast food chain but want to dress, drive in the mornings until they pick their kids up from school, expressing their sense of independence. So there's a whole, there's something we need to recognize in America that's not right and left, but it's a sense of, don't tell me what to do. Now, we tell people to wear seatbelts, and we know it saves lives. We tell them to wear masks, and we know if they would, it would save lives. But there's a whole movement toward, don't tell me what to do as long as I'm not hurting anyone else and
I
want to drive part-time.
I have 40 seconds left, and you just made me think, too, about the Fair Tax Amendment. Pardon me, the graduated income tax amendment, which has failed here, is going to fail here in Illinois. And I think you would champion that, correct?
You know, I think that if they're going to tax, everybody likes to know what everybody else is being taxed. And I think it was a chicken way out of the current legislature dealing with the immediate financial problems. I don't think it was about taxing the rich, because the rich will be the first to move. I think that, you know, Governor Pritzker is a very wealthy man, and when this fair tax passes and when someday he's not governor, I don't think he's going to be an Illinois resident. I think Ken Griffith could
That's
move
an interesting
any of his
point.
Homes in Florida or
well,
Europe.
The governor put, $50 million of his own money into this, and I think that was seen as proof that he really believes in the principle. But if he really believes in the principle, when he's not in office, he has to promise he'll stay and pay whatever that higher rate is.
Exactly. That's the point I was trying to make.
Yeah,
thanks,
well
John.
Put. It's 12:28. Travel well, Terry. We're out of time. Yeah, TerrySavage.com. You can read
See
and follow
week.
Her there.
Thank you.
You betcha. At 12:36, this is the Wintrust Business Lunch. You're listening to WGN Radio. We appreciate you tuning in. Let's tune in to Greg McBride now, Senior Vice President and Chief Analyst at Bankrate. Go to Bankrate.com. Welcome back to the show, Greg.
Great to be with you. Thanks for having me again.
You know, the Fed is meeting, what, today and tomorrow, and then today and tomorrow, right?
Yeah, 2 days meeting, starting today, finishing up tomorrow, about 1 o'clock your time.
That sounds profoundly boring to me, and yet I think the consequences are very personal and interesting to us, right?
Yeah, and boring is good, right? I mean, you know, we've got enough uncertainty and volatility and, you know, enough just unknowns that are headwinds to the economy right now. You know, you certainly don't want, you know, the Federal Reserve to bring about more of that. So, you know, they've already done what they can do with regard to interest rates. And at this point, they've pretty much done what they can do as far as stimulus. I think the refrain you've heard over and over again, and even from the Fed themselves, is that, you know, at this point, it's really up to Congress to provide some stimulus measures to households and small businesses. The Fed, they can lend, but they can't spend. And I think you're going to hear something to that effect from them tomorrow as well.
And that's not news, though, right? I mean, they weren't in any different position last time we did have a stimulus bill, right?
No, I mean, if anything, the risks to the economy have grown since their last meeting in September. The virus has, long been the number one threat to the economy. But with the passage of time and no passage of stimulus, the risk to the economy is growing because you've got households and small businesses that are just getting that much closer to the financial brink. Right. And so I think the stakes there are growing, and I would expect the Fed to point out as much.
Yeah, I was just going to say, so then what do they do about that? I mean, do they have a bully pulpit? Will they nudge Congress? Does Congress listen?
I don't even know if I'd go so far as to call it a nudge. You know, the Fed kind of prides themselves on being, staying out of the political fray, but they've maybe thrown a little shade in the sense of just kind of saying, here's where the line sets, we have lending powers, not spending powers, that the spending is up to Congress, and more, kind of deferring to, the ball being in Congress's court. At this point, that's, really all they can do. The Fed can't manufacture demand, they can't cure coronavirus, and they can't provide the type of stimulus that's most needed right now.
You know, one other area that Congress could address is the eviction moratorium, which I'm not sure what the status of that is, but I've never understood the wisdom if people in a situation like this, these aren't deadbeats, these are people who for obvious reasons are having trouble, I've never understood the value of kicking them out of their homes or apartments. Can you just talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, that's in effect until the end of the year, and that's one of those, I think, urgent items that need addressed as part of stimulus is what happens at the end of December. And not just from the tenant's perspective, but also from the landlord's perspective.
Yeah.
In that, the solution is, ideally would be something that's a little bit more targeted, where it's basically the stimulus would basically pay the rent for those that have lost jobs or are prevented from working right now due to the virus. It makes the landlords whole. It keeps the tenants current, problem solved. What's instead happened is the can has been kind of kicked down the road further and further by extending that moratorium. But in so doing, the unpaid back rent grows. Let's be realistic. That's just not a number people are going to be able to catch up on, even once the virus is behind us and people get back to work. So then you're going to have a whole other issue. It really squeezes the mom and pop landlords that, retirees that, rely on that for income.
Well, I sure sounded like a tenant there and not a landlord, right? Because if you have people in there who can't pay and we want to support them, what are we doing for the person that does have to pay? The landlord probably has a mortgage on that, right?
Yeah, exactly. And we're talking about, the big, large institutional property owners, and those entities, they have access to capital markets. They've been able to get, paycheck protection program loans. The mom and pop landlords haven't. They've been on the hook for the property taxes, the property insurance, the repairs all this time. And so those landlords often on the same side of the table as the tenants here just saying, hey, look, we need some of this stimulus to address this problem. And, I think, that's just one of a few areas where something targeted would be very helpful. But, the longer it drags on, not only does it doesn't happen, but then the more the likelihood is whatever stimulus you do get, it tends to be broader brush rather than the more targeted, more effective measures.
It is a have or have not recovery, isn't it, or economy. Do you have much to say about how much longer the real estate market can stay this hot and, for that matter, important?
Well, you know, I think, you know, real estate is going to stay strong into 2021, but I do think that momentum will slowly dissipate next year as the forbearances roll off, and then depending upon what happens with things like we were talking about the eviction moratorium, you know, a lot of those forbearances are in effect until about the spring of next year. That's where that end of that 12-month period will come to an end, and, you know, I expect that's when we're going to start to see the uptick in delinquencies that we haven't yet seen. And those delinquencies, some will eventually become defaults and foreclosures and consumer bankruptcies. And so, you know, as that happens, I think it robs the housing market of the momentum it has right now. It's not going to be anything like what we saw post-housing crisis. I don't want to put that in the same stratosphere in any way, shape, or form. But it does just kind of robs the momentum from the one sector that I think has been a clear positive for the economic recovery to date.
Greg McBride at Bankrate. Any last thought from you, Greg?
Well, you know, you mentioned the uneven recovery, and it's, you know, it's kind of spawned its own term, this K-shaped recovery, the two legs of the letter K, one kind of like an escalator up, the other one like an escalator down, you know, just reflecting the, you know, vastly different experiences in this economic recovery, that it's not falling evenly on all households. Many are motoring along just fine or even progressing, others, you know, falling further and further behind, which, you know, again, kind of speaks to that urgent need for stimulus.
Every time the president champions everyone's 401ks, I say, hooray, most people don't have a 401k. So I guess that's just another example of how fractured even the economy or recovery is for people. Greg McBride is a senior vice president and chief analyst at Bankrate, bankrate.com. Thanks for your time today, Greg.
Always a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Let's go into the WGN Radio Newsroom. Steve Grzanich has still more business news.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. Recreational marijuana has only been legal for 10 months in Illinois, and sales have already topped $500 million. Cranes reports that sales rose 11% in October for the biggest jump since July. Marijuana retailers recorded $75 million in sales last month, which is about $2.4 million a day. The growth is largely attributed to new cannabis stores popping up across the state. Chicago startup R-Squared has been acquired by Citus AMC, a New York-based tech solution for the commercial and residential real estate finance industry. R-Squared is a real estate tech company that provides valuation, underwriting, and asset management software. Multiple counties want Chicago separated from Illinois, creating a new state. Counties including Christian, Shelby, and Moultrie voted yesterday in favor of measures to make that happen. Many downstate counties have been pushing for Chicago to become the 51st state because they say they're overlooked politically, culturally, and economically. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
WGN Radio News from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom comes your way in about 7 or 8 minutes. We've got enough time to say hello to Ken Coates. Ken, thanks for joining us. You're on WGN.
Hey, good afternoon. How are you today?
Pretty good. You are the founder and owner of something called EnoID. Tell us what that is.
Yeah, EnoID is a background screening service catered towards SMBs, so small to medium-sized business.
And the idea is, keep going, yeah, finish that.
Yeah, so our deal is to help a small to medium-sized business essentially scale and grow, and we feel that the importance or the key to that is finding great people. By trade, we are a licensed PI firm, and we do big investigation security clearances across the nation for some of the largest law enforcement agencies in the country. And so we wanted to kind of pare that down for small to medium-sized business where risk mitigation is important, where getting qualified people are important. So we created EnoID.
The idea is then if I'm hiring people, and it's harder to interview people in person maybe these days, I'll use your service to screen these applicants, huh?
Yes. Yeah, you know, and unfortunately, as you mentioned, during a pandemic, it's hard to do these in-person tangible types of interviews, and then also there's just not, I guess, the readily available tools for small to medium-sized business to learn how to efficiently and effectively screen.
Well, let me just bounce this off of you. If I was interviewing, if I was hiring somebody, I would look at your resume. I'd probably do some sort of Google or Internet search on your social media, and then I'd try and eyeball you in some way, FaceTime, Zoom, in-person meeting, and I'd hire you. What else do you have that's not? You know what I mean?
Yeah, we have a tried and true proven methodology, because as you mentioned, some of that which you kind of highlighted is kind of making those calls on gut, which I do tell people to trust their intuition. I mean, never, you know, even whatever the methodology, if something is telling you somebody is not right, then, you know, certainly follow that. But we basically put up a scientific process. So we always believe in trust but verify. And so some of the things that we kind of introduce is, first of all, of, you know, as you mentioned, that you're looking to bring someone on your team, is to kind of come up with that desired scorecard, if you will. So, like, what are the five essential traits that they should have? And what we implore is actually that if you can have that automated. So let's just say if it was hiring a marketing person, and you want them to be able to, I don't know, blog or write content or have social media skills. And so you want to be able to quantify that into a metric, as opposed to just saying you have these skills, but have them self-grade on a scale of 1 to 5 their competency level in, say, in providing that service, and to provide examples of that. So that really takes a lot of the guesswork and really gives you a scientific method that in actuality helps, because it's all driven by KPIs and metrics, as opposed to just that gut feel that you normally just have because you feel the warm and fuzzies during an in-person interview.
Yeah. A minute left, Kenneth. You mentioned, though, law enforcement agencies that you work with. Does your service then include kind of a criminal background check, too?
Absolutely. So part of the core skills that we look at is of course, experience. You know, you're hiring a person based on experience, so you want to validate employment, education, any kind of certifications and license, but also trustworthiness. And so that comes into criminal and even liability, like driving records, credit reports, whatever the position calls for, and that's what we provide as well.
Yeah. I would imagine the need for your service is maybe greater now than ever, huh?
Absolutely, especially when we're looking at essential workers. Like I mentioned, we have a pretty good stronghold in the law enforcement community. I mean, if I told you who we did background checks, I would have to whack you.
Just kidding. You'd have to kill me. I understand.
But we work in some of the higher echelons of the federal government, as well as the state police. I'm the largest. And so we've been able to pair that for SMBs. And so essential workers, whether it's healthcare screening, logistics and warehouse screening, you know, our goal is to help these small and medium-sized businesses effectively grow. Yeah. And we by getting the right people.
It's good to know there's a business like that. It's called eKnowID, K-N-O-W-I-D, eKnowID. Visit eKnowID.com. Kenneth Coates. Well done, Kenneth. Thanks for your time today.
Thank you.